Today we are going to discuss one of my favorite heroes in jazz, but someone who's relatively unknown because of the path he took with his life. Now, as many of you know, I was born and raised right here in Florida. And so my options were fairly limited because I was born with a pretty good amount of melanin in my skin. And so as I started to become a musician and look forward, and I really love this jazz thing, and I'm looking at where am I going, my heroes were also limited. And my biggest hero was a guy named Julian Cannonball Adderley, because he grew up right there in Tampa. And he had gone to Florida A&M University with my band director, Turner Covington, and I was encouraged to follow that path. So I spent a lot of time listening to the recordings of Cannonball Adderley and his quintet, and of course the stuff he did with Miles Davis and anyone else. I came across an album, is Cannonball Adderley Quintet Live from the Lighthouse in Hermosa Beach, California. And it was an unusual album for them because normally the Adderley brothers were the only horn players, Nat and Cannon. This album had a third horn, a guy playing tenor sax and a few other things. And his name was Yusuf Lateef. I'm going, man, that's a crazy name. I wonder if he can play. Well, boop. Oh yeah, he can really, really play. And my favorite piece, there were a lot of great songs on the album. It was live, it was real. And Cannon was talking a whole lot of trash, which I love to hear. But there was this tune called Primitivo that tried to elicit feelings of what music may have been thousands of years ago. And it featured Yusuf Lateef on a very unusual jazz instrument, the oboe. I mean, whoa, I've never heard that. But it was perfect for this purpose because some of the earliest woodwind instruments around the world, what are you talking about in Middle East, in early Hebrew civilization, in early European civilizations, were double reed instruments. The oboe predates the clarinet by hundreds of years. So it fit just perfectly, and Yusuf played the heck out of it. We referred to him as Lateef. So I followed him for a while, but he kind of disappeared off the scene, man. I'm like, what happened to brother Lateef? Of course, this would have been, you know, late 60s, you know, 65, 66. I had no idea what happened. Well, let me tell you how it went. He was born in 1920. In Chattanooga, Tennessee. And his family, like many, many black families in the South, were part of that great migration. They were getting the heck out of the South and going up North for better opportunity and less racism. So they first went to a place I know pretty well, right on the lake. It's called Lorain, Ohio. And to this very day, it is a center for that supports the automobile industry. And I know Lorain kind of a small town, and the last time I was there in the 70s, it was still producing the biggest thing there is auto manufacturing parts. But it's a small town, and I am sure that there were some issues with the family getting along there. So the family moved in 1925, I think, from Lorain to Detroit, which is where they stayed. And in the process, they changed their last name from Huddleston. The given name was William Emanuel Huddleston. And when they got to Detroit, his name became William Emanuel Evans. This was also common for black folks at this period of time. You're talking about the height of Jim Crow, and a lot of black folks would find themselves in trouble they did not create. And in order to get out of it, they would simply move and change their names. I know that my grandfather did the same identical thing when he moved from Jacksonville to Manatee County and then later in Sarasota. Now, yeah, it's storming, okay? And it should be, so you gotta ignore the rain. I kinda like it. It is Florida, this is what you get. I'm gonna keep telling this story about Yusuf Lateef. Now, in Detroit, he's growing up and everything is great and, you know, he's hearing all the music and seeing everything that is going on. And so he decides he wants to play a little bit. So he buys himself an alto saxophone. And then he hears Prayers, Lester Young. And he goes, oh no, I want to play this little thing. I'm going to play tenor. And also the fact that Yusuf was a huge man. His autobiography is called The Gentle Giant. Yeah, he was a big fella. So the alto probably looked like a toy in his hands to begin with, and the tenor was far more appropriate. So that is what he did. And as he grew up in Detroit, some of the associates he has were people like Elvin Jones, Paul Chambers, Kenny Burrell, Milt Jackson, just young local Detroit musicians who later would become icons in the history of jazz internationally. So he started out in this incubator of serious, serious jazz musicians. Oh yeah, okay. So Saint's playing, he's doing okay, and things are going really, really well for him, and he's playing around Detroit, and things are going great, and Dizzy Gillespie comes through somewhere about 1948 or so, and hears him and go, ooh, that boy got some talent. 1949, Dizzy come back through there again and say, hey, you need to come with me. We going on the road. And so he went on the road with Dizzy Gillespie. Evidently, he didn't like the road too well, like a lot of musicians, you know, they don't, it's just too much out there for them. It's not always healthy and comfortable. So by 1950, he's back in Detroit, but not just gigging. Man's got a good mind. So he enrolls at Wayne State University as a double major in composition, I said it, and music education, woodwinds, particularly the flute. Yeah, add the instrument and learning it at the highest level. This started him on the road that made him unique. So he's there and he's doing that, and once again he gets the opportunity to do some different kind of things, and he's playing here and playing there, and then he gets an opportunity to make his own recordings somewhere around 1957, the height of hard bop jazz recordings, you know, Miles Davis, kind of blue, Sonny's out there doing his thing. It's all kinds of great jazz albums. Yusuf is signed by two record companies. Neither one warned him exclusively. Savoy had it and Prestige had it. And he's making records for both at the same time. By this time, he's kind of relocated to New York. And that thing goes pretty well for him for a few years. And when it stopped going well for him, like 1959 or so, he did what he always did. He went back to school to learn more. This time the Manhattan School of Music. And he achieved his bachelor's degree in 1969. And his master's degree in 1970. Oh yeah, he's doing it. At the same time, during the same period of time, He's playing here, he's playing there. This is the same period of time in those 60s he made that album with Cannonball Alley that I talked about in 1964. He's doing all kind of things. He is picking up different instruments from different cultures. He's picking up instruments from China. He's picking up instruments that go back into Hebrew antiquity. He's picking up instruments that go back into Islamic antiquity. He's picking up instruments from Africa, and he is learning them all. He is becoming a specialist in all of these unusual instruments. And as some people say, he became a master of world music before world music ever existed. And if you go and you listen to his recordings, and you must do this, you will be amazed at how he blends all of this music together, even when he's doing stuff that sounds like fusion, even when he's doing stuff that kind of blends classical with jazz. You can always hear the blues in there, baby. You can always hear the blues. Now, somewhere along the line, when he went from William to Yusuf, he did so because he became a Ahmadiyya Muslim. And he became very, very devout. And at this point, he stopped doing clubs. He would not play where alcohol was consumed or sold. And if you wanted him to perform, no alcohol. So he started doing festivals and concerts outside, and whenever he did, they would shut down the beer wagon, shut down the mixed drinks, and no consuming of alcohol either while he's on stage. He was very, very devout about that. By 1975, he has achieved his PhD from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. Oh, yeah. He's still climbing, baby. He's still trying to get to where he is going. And now he starts traveling. He becomes a research fellow at a university in northern Nigeria. So now he is in Africa, and he's picking up all of these instruments. He's got the money and the license to travel and collect even more instruments and learn from the masters of these instruments, the sitar, the shikar, the om, the kohol, all of these instruments that he learned from the people who had those instruments in their cultures for years. He learned an Egyptian instrument that had been used in Egypt for 7,000 years. This man was serious about his mission of combining everything into a world music. And remember what I said? His autobiography is called The Gentle Giant. Now, somewhere around 2000 or so, I was doing a conference in Chicago, and I'm at Blackstone with my friend Sam Hayward, sitting there eating, and I'm looking, and I see a big guy, African garb and whatnot, and he turns his head to get that unusually shaped head, and I go, that looks like, and then finally he must have felt my eyes just beaming on him. He turned all the way around and looked right at me, and I saw that face. I said, oh my God, that's Yusuf Lateef. I could not help myself. I jumped up and I went over and disturbed his meal with his wife. And he was so generous and so cordial. And he invited me to come to his booth, and he would share some of his books with me. So nice. I just never met a person so peaceful, so nice. And I did go to his booth, and I did buy, didn't let him give me anything, his Flute Book of the Blues. I'm gonna say it one more time. Yusuf Lateef, Flute Book of the Blues. Now, he was also what we call an entrepreneur. That's part of the Islamic culture. We do take care of ourselves, especially as it relates to African Americans who embrace that culture in this country. So he had a company called Y'all Music. Y'all Music. Oh, come on, don't make it a joke. It is Y-A-L. which is Yusuf Abdul Latif Music. Yeah. And that produces records. He had another company called Abdul Music that produced his books and things of that sort. So he was taking care of business as well. He became a full professor at University of Massachusetts at Amherst, also at Smith College, and even a third college. So when he came back to America in 86, I think, he took a job at University of Massachusetts and two other colleges. He had all this knowledge and he wanted to share. He had always been a man who loved nature, who loved God's creation, and which is probably why he learned all of these ancient instruments from around the world and used them in his music to express himself to so many people. Guess what? In order to be closer to nature, he bought a plot of land in the middle of a forest and built himself a wooden home. And that is where he lived, and he would travel from his forest to his teaching assignments in neighboring regions. He is also heavily honored. National Endowment for the Arts gave him a Jazz Master's Endowment, which is the highest honor any jazz musician can get in the United States of America. He did an album just for the fun of it, with very light music. He played all the instruments. He played about 15 different woodwind instruments. He played keyboards. He played stringed instruments. He played the guitar. He played everything. He mixed it all. It won a Grammy, I think, in 2000 or so. Yusuf continued to do what he did right up until his death at 93 years of age. He taught until 93 years of age. And when he died, his family followed his wishes. They auctioned off all of his instruments. Not because they needed the money. Most people, oh my God, were they that poor? No. He did not want his instruments stored in a museum, on a shelf or in a closet. He wanted his instruments doing what musical instruments are supposed to do, and that is make music. So people who bid on these instruments, bid on them with the understanding that they would play them actively in public so that Yusuf's instruments will continue to sing their songs. This is the spirit of this man. And just go out and do your little Spotify or your Apple Music or your Amazon Music or whatever and say, hey, play some music by Yusuf Latif, and you will be richly blessed because the music he made is so profound. And yet, no matter what he did, although he hated the connotation jazz because he said it was too general, his music always had jazz in it, always, and his music always had the blues in it. Because no matter what he did, he was still from Detroit. And one of his last albums was called Detroit, Motown. Got it? You gotta have some soul, baby. You gotta be able to move. You gotta have some blues. You gotta have some groove. And it's gotta be so infectious that it can reach every creature's heart and soul on this planet. That is the spirit of William Emanuel Herzen, William Emanuel Evans, who we know as Yusuf Abdul Latif. Latif! Preach to us, brother. Brother Latif. Thank you very much. Hope you enjoyed this.